This hour is brought to you by Menards, everybody.
Save big money at Menards.
Woo! It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got 5 on it. Number 1.
Question number 1 on 5 on it with Rahimi and Harris. How much preseason football do you want Caleb Williams to ultimately play this preseason?
I think he should play in the next 2 games since we didn't see him in this one. Not 1, but 2. I know it's a quick turnaround and you have more joint practices and the Chiefs are on the way, as are the next opponent on Sunday. But I still think that if you're good enough to have 87 snaps before the game, then I think you're good to play in a series or 2 in each, right? At least. At least.
I would like to see Caleb Williams play a half. That's probably not going to happen, but that's what I would like to see.
I mean, it's what should happen.
Unless they go, let's say he starts a game and they have 2 touchdown drives. Okay, you can sit him then. But otherwise, I'd like to see Caleb Williams play a half of football. Make sure that that offensive line has got it together. Is that too much to ask? To make sure the offensive line itself is the brand new group with a bunch of guys that have not played together before?
Well, and most importantly, I think it's not just the offensive line, it's you with the offensive line. If cadence is still this much of a focus and this much of a concern, then at some point you need to also see how it is against somebody who you're not going to face in the Bills, right? At least on Sunday. And then ultimately, perhaps there is no better place to practice it than a preseason game at Arrowhead.
I mean, that's a great point. I just would like to see extended Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson, get together. Let me know that you guys can cook together. I don't want to get to game 1 of the regular season and see Ben look at Caleb and Caleb look at Ben and things aren't together the way they need to be when it's live bullets and when it's... Who's that guy that runs the defense in Minnesota? He's been known to take some things out and throw them at you.
Man, you know, a fan of his... And I don't even know if fan is the right word. A respecter of what he brings to the game is coming up at 1 o'clock in Carmen Vitale when she joins us.
Let's get her thoughts on it.
5 on it. Number 2.
Should there be OT in preseason?
I know. I'm the psycho that wants overtime in preseason. I didn't want to see the tie. But it's not necessarily for the reasons that you might think. It's not because I have some interest in who's going to win that game, and I don't necessarily think, oh, if Caleb Williams had played, would it have been a tie? I'm not thinking that into it. But when you consider that a Super Bowl was arguably lost based on overtime strategy, the most important of all of the games, and that it came down to a coaching decision out of Kyle Shanahan when he decided to take the ball first and the Chiefs benefited. Could we all use a few more reps?
No. No, because a few more reps will get people hurt. There's a reason they shortened overtime from 15 to 10 minutes. Because people were out here getting hurt.
You think if I asked 49ers fans if they think that they could have had another opportunity to try to practice that when it didn't count, that it would have helped?
You don't need to practice that in the preseason. You need to just know the rules at practice. That's something you just go over in practice.
The most important game exposes that your rule preparation was not as good as it could have been.
I think the biggest thing you're leaving out here when you're saying yes is that the rules for postseason are different than the rules for the regular season and overtime. So
I'm
practicing
aware.
In this preseason wouldn't matter because you're playing by a different set of rules.
Also, well, the starters in the preseason aren't playing at the end of an OT game.
Exactly.
But there is no overtime.
And there shouldn't be.
So you could theoretically have it be based on postseason overtime to be able to help do this stuff. And I knew that. I told you in the pre-show meeting. I know that postseason overtime is different for regular season.
I know, but I just want to make sure everybody else out there knows as we tell you why. No, there should not be overtime in preseason. Get on the plane and go home.
I'm telling you right now, I take lessons from the warning signs that I get. And I'm not saying that I'm going to coach in a Super Bowl anytime soon. But I'm also, if I'm on an NFL staff, I'm trying to figure out a way to make sure that doesn't happen to us.
I just want to say this. The incident you're talking about with Kyle Shanahan was 2 years ago. The first thing every team did last preseason, last training camp, is make sure everybody understands. And then the first thing that all the playoff teams did last year is make sure all their teams understood the difference between postseason overtime and regular season overtime.
I mean, like, when it counts the most. I'm just thinking if there's some extra way to be able to prepare for that, that might be a good way.
I don't want to get anybody hurt.
Do you think coaches, if you gave all the head coaches truth serum, would they rather have preseason games or the joint practices? What would they rather have more of? I think they would rather do the joint practices than a preseason game.
I think they say that, but ultimately there's a reason those preseason games still exist. And I don't think it's just to sell tickets. Because Soldier Field wasn't a sellout yesterday. I don't think that's what that's about.
No, I think coaches would still say, no, we're going to keep our joint practices and still have our preseason game, because they learn more in the preseason games about those bottom of half of the roster players and whether or not they want to keep them. It's a better set of evaluation to have three different preseason games to evaluate everybody fighting for a spot on the back half of the roster.
Number three.
Third question on Five on It with Rahimi and Harris. We're shifting the baseball. Make your strongest case for how the Cubs will win the NL Central.
All right, I thought about this on my way here. Bud Selig comes back as temporary commissioner and switches the Brewers back to the American League.
That's actually not bad.
That's all I got.
That's actually not bad.
How fast can this happen? Can we get this done?
Wait,
with the quickness.
Robbie, did you know that the Brewers used to be in the American League?
I did.
Okay, good. Yeah,
I found that out last week.
Do you know about the M&B logo?
Oh, I did learn about that. Isn't it a glove? It's a glove.
Twitch mob, I don't need you guys killing my dream of Bud Selig being temporary commissioner to get the Brewers to go back to the AL. I don't need that kind of energy
in
my dream.
Is you'd have to deal with Bud Selig as commissioner, and I don't remember that as a fine time in growing the game of baseball.
Well, I think he thinks he was saving it, but
I don't think he was. I don't think he. I think they survived with him as commissioner. Look,
I think a lot of people have a bone to pick with him, and I think the Hall of Famers would like, or the ones who are being excluded would probably like to have a discussion as well.
I'll say this: here's how the Cubs come back. They get Kyle Tucker healthy. They get Miguel Amaya back.
MacGyver? I heard MacGyver. Well, I he would MacGyver. Also help the Cubs
yeah, he
in
would,
this situation.
You know, come up with a concoction, come up with a formula, come up with an invention that would help them win the NL Central. But I think
he would turn a paperclip into a torpedo bat. That's what MacGyver would do.
The Cubs aren't going to play 750 baseball the rest of the way, but they do need the Brewers to just come back to earth. The best way for the Cubs to win the Central is to sweep a five-game series next week. That's the best way, Layla.
Oh, my God.
Sweep a five-game series.
What is your confidence level? Last week we came up with the BBCI, the Ben Brown Confidence Index. What is your confidence index when it comes to the Cubs' likelihood of either A, winning the series against the Brewers next week?
Just winning.
Or B, sweeping.
So winning
the series?
I think
Bud Selig has to come back.
I put winning the series at 50-50. It's a home series. I think they could win it. I see sweeping the series. They got about a 7% chance of winning this or sweeping the series.
Also, as a bonus question, which fan base is in more of a tizzy right now? I'll give you three options.
Oh, can I guess the options?
It's Yankees, Mets, or Cubs.
Those were my three options.
Which fan base is in more of a tizzy?
I believe that the Mets are in the biggest tizzy. I think the Yankees are in the biggest tizzy.
It's the Mets. The Mets have lost so many straight games, and you just signed Juan Soto to this massive deal, and you suck. That sucks.
No, but Soto's been doing his job, though. I think it's the Yankees because Devin Williams. What?
It was raining from outside in on Saturday. American Family Field's roof did nothing to protect the Brewers fans that deluge, however you want to say it. Rainstorm, plague, biblical event, and yet they still even won that game 7-4. I think it's the Mets. You get swept like that, you spend $11 billion on everybody, you think you can do the right things. And confidently, David Stearns decided he wasn't going to go after extra additions to certain positions. No, I think it's still the Mets because of how much money they spent going in, knowing that, for example, they get swept by the Brewers. But join the club, guys. Join the club. Dodgers are with you.
Couple of good texts right here. 847, the Cubs will win the NL Central if 25 Brewers get PED suspensions. I imagine the 26th Brewer would probably be Andrew Vaughn in this scenario. He would not get the PED suspension. Also, 815 brings up a brilliant point. Wouldn't the Astros have to go back to the NL Central? So now you got to deal with the Astros to win the division.
Let's scratch the whole idea then. Oh, man. Oh.
In a very less Grobstein moment, I was there. I was at the last series for the Astros against the Cubs in the National League. And that was the first time that two 100-loss teams had met in a regular season in like 50 years or something. Luke and I were both there. Luke Stuckmeyer. And when he heard that stat, he goes, "And we're just the reporters to do it."
I was there.
Like, do you like losing? Then Luke and I are the reporters for you.
Also, 630 is claiming that yesterday's game was a sellout, the Bears. I didn't know that.
Well, I shouldn't. The capacity and the attendance was not...
people showing
it
up.
It was in the 40s.
Yeah, people actually showing up and dealing with the swamp that
it
was
is,
Soldier
it is
Field.
In my notes here.
Swampy Soldier Field.
Yeah, so there were, and also if you looked at the game, that was not a capacity crowd. Layla mentioned Soldier Field was not a sellout yesterday. Our texts get cut off. Okay.
Yeah. Brad Biggs tweeted yesterday that the attendance was 43,537.
Yeah,
that's
I knew the official number. The attendance was 43, so I knew it was lower than capacity. But for those who sat outside, I salute you.
Sweep a five-game series. That's all I'm saying.
Luke Kanellis had a suit on, and Ant Heron was in a vest and a long sleeve.
Oh, he had
shirt.
The jacket. He said, no, thank you.
Amazing.
Number four.
Finally, a real question we have coming up. The Bulls have reportedly offered Josh Giddey 4 years at $20 million a year. He reportedly wants $30 million a year. How realistic is it that he signs the $11.9 million qualifying offer?
Okay, why do I feel like nobody found this out this weekend? Like, how sneaky was that? That was Jake Fisher who reported it. Hat tip to my buddy Mike Williams, who I used to work with. He's the one who also saw this. And he does a great job, Bulls Confidential. But is that the most... news dump of news dumps, if that's the case? Or did he just step into information? Newsweek has it aggregated. Fisher's work is behind a Substack. And it says, leaked sources say that the Bulls made an offer of $80 million over 4 years to restricted free agent Josh Giddey when the offseason commenced on June 30th. Giddey, of course, is seeking an annual salary in the $30 million range, as one does. Chicago has been anchored in the $20 million range in annual value ever since its original offer. And naturally, Jonathan Kuminga is mentioned in all of this.
Well, yeah, because how would you feel about a Kuminga for Giddey trade?
Well, Robbie would be distraught.
How does that help the Bulls, getting Jonathan Kuminga? What are the Bulls' needs right now?
Oh, the Bulls need a lot. They need a GM who's willing to make trades for
who is making plays on the Bulls. Picks.
I mean, moving Vooch is a big piece of this.
Yes.
Like who makes plays on the Bulls? It's Coby White and then who else? They need a playmaker. Josh Giddey is a playmaker.
Who'd you say Josh?
I said Josh Mickey. I don't know how that came out of.
He's been Mickey Mouse.
We talk
it.
For a long time nah, every that's cool. day.
So here's the thing. I think with every passing day, it becomes more and more likely that Josh Giddey will sign an $11.9 million qualifying offer. Because Robbie makes a good point. Josh Giddey does make plays. So it's not like if he signs the qualifying offer, they're going to freeze out Josh Giddey.
A lot of plays.
So he'll have a whole year of a runway to figure it out and to show us that the back half of last season was what Josh Giddey actually is. And maybe even show some improvements on defense as well.
I will say that if this is the truth from Jake Fisher, that good on the Bulls for not doing the same thing that they did with Patrick Williams. When you know that there wasn't a market for somebody, or that you may have had a different understanding of the market, this was pretty straightforward. You don't have other teams that you go to. Like, there's not a lot of leverage here. I know Brooklyn's been bantered about, but until that happens, this is what you're working with.
Listen, they should have signed Patrick Williams to the qualifying offer, being specific about what should have happened. So now they have a chance to just let it play out. There's no reason for the Bulls to flinch on this. There's no leverage play here for Josh Giddey. He's either going to take your $20 million a year, or he's going to sign the QO.
Oh, I had a bonus question, okay. Five on it, relating to the Bears.
Five on it!
Since we have time. I wrote down in my notes, which was more exciting, a 24-24 preseason tie or that stupid Seattle game where they lost 6-3 last year that was a real game?
Wait, do we need to get through
the
fifth question
first?
I
think it was
this game. Or no, I thought you were saying bonus, like the end of the five.
No, I'm throwing it in right now.
Okay, the 6-3 game was way worse than anything. That
wasn't this more exciting? Sunday was
more exciting. Yeah. What do you mean?
We're going to deserve trophies.
I told you my dad said watching that game.
Of the 6-3 game.
Oh, this is what Bears football looks like, huh?
The fact that Ian Happ was at that game, guys. Like, you never want to go to a football game again.
Ian Happ tried to play it up too, like it was worth seeing.
I mean, he gets street cred, there's no doubt. But still.
Five on
Number five.
It.
Continue on with Five on It on 670 The Score with Raheem and Harris. Here's the question. Was there any doubt the White Sox would win on Ozzie Guillen bobblehead day?
Hell no! If George McCaskey can say hell on a broadcast, I can too. I loved seeing that. I mostly love seeing also just the moments that happened before the game with Ozzie and his family being out there and how he is still very much a part of this White Sox organization. Love watching him and Chuck on the pre- and post-game show. I, of course, loved working with Ozzie, and I think it was fantastic that they were able to win on Ozzie Guillen bobblehead day. And another example of how the White Sox are growing is that, because would you have ever said on any bobblehead day last year that that would have happened?
No, because Colson Montgomery wasn't in the lineup on any bobblehead day last year.
Ooh.
Did you see that man's home run? 452 feet onto the concourse, and it was just a bomb. A rock. It wasn't a bomb, because bombs go way up and then come down. This was a rocket. It went straight out.
Can I tell you the exit velo in distance?
Yes.
And the launch angle makes this even more wild, actually.
Go ahead.
The exit velo, you heard PCA on the broadcast last night on ESPN say 104 miles an hour off the bat is fast. PCA was respecting 104. This went 114.5 miles an hour.
That's
hard. Not even real.
That's the hardest ball he's hit on the south side.
To compare, Lenin Sosa's home run was 103.8 miles an hour. This was 114.
But neither of those were in the 70s is what you're saying.
The distance was 452 feet.
I saw where it landed. I knew what was good.
But the launch angle, typically you're going to have a launch angle in the 30s if that's the case. No, laser. This was 27 degree launch angle.
Yeah, that's an acute angle. Yeah,
that torpedo bat is working for him.
It is definitely working. Also, we got this text. Hot take coming from 815. Hot take. I am a Cubs fan, but my brother drugged me to the South Side for a game yesterday. Hot take. The Sox do it better as far as family atmosphere. Kids got to come in early and get autographs. It was crazy seeing Ozzie back on the mound with his grandchildren. I will proudly display my bobblehead in my Bears and Cubs man cave.
Aww.
Sox don't get enough credit for a great game day experience. They just need a better product on the field. Yesterday was great.
But that's the point. It was great. It was wonderful seeing everybody in the Guillen family there. I thought that was a lot of fun. And to know that the Sox win and back him up just makes you feel good. The warm fuzzies, if you will. I also want to tell people about this. This is pretty cool. If you don't know, now you know. Listen for your chance to win a pair of general admission tickets for Riot Fest to see Blink-182, Weird Al Yankovic, Alkaline Trio, Rilo Kiley, The Pogues, and more at Riot Fest on Friday, September 19th. Weird Al.
It'll be hoodie season, so.
I've seen Weird Al live three times. He's great.
You wow. have?
As a kid. My family loves Weird Al.
That
makes
awesome.
No sense.
I love that, though. He's fun.
What's your favorite Weird Al song? Do you have one?
Probably Fat. Because I'm fat. I'm fat. Yeah.
Yeah. That came out when I was a kid.
And the suit blew up.
The music
There's
video.
Nothing like fart jokes and like at Weird Al songs and parodies coming out at a magical time.
His polka medleys, too, are great as well.
He's a good guy. Good guy to watch.
Idols is playing at Riot Fest on Sunday. I can't see them because Bears. Pretty sure it's at the same time as the Bears and Cowboys game, which I want the Bears to win, for the record. For the record.
Hmm.
Nah, if they don't, that's going to be catastrophic.
The Matt Eberflus revenge game? I got
Especially
you.
When, if like they don't have Micah Parsons, and no, I'm not going there.
They're
going
to have Micah Parsons. We know how this is going to end.
I don't necessarily know that he's going to be playing in that game.